Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 8, Chapters 14 and 15. Chapter 14, his son Maxentius, who secured for himself the tyranny at Rome, at the beginning counterfeited our faith in order to please and fawn upon the Roman populace, and for this reason ordered his subjects to give over the persecution against Christians. For he was feigning piety and endeavoring to appear favorable and very mild above his predecessors. Yet his deeds have not shown him to be such as it was hoped he would be. On the contrary, he drove headlong into every form of wickedness. And there is not a single abominable and dissolute act that he has left undone, committing adulteries and all kinds of rape. In fact, he used to separate from their husbands lawfully married women, insult them with the utmost dishonor, and send them back again to their husbands. And he made it his business thus to assail persons, neither undistinguished nor obscure, but the most eminent of those who had attained the highest rank in the assembly of the Roman Senate were the very and especial objects of his offensive behavior. All cowered before him, people and rulers, famous and obscure, and were worn out by his terrible tyranny. And even though they remained quiet and endured the bitter servitude, still there was no escape from the tyrant's murderous cruelty. Once, for example, on a small pretense, he gave the people over to his bodyguard to be slaughtered, and immense numbers of the Roman people were killed in the midst of the city by the spears and arms, not of the Scythians, nor even of the barbarians, but of their very fellow citizens. Of a truth, it would not even be possible to reckon how many senators were slaughtered because of designs on their wealth, for countless numbers were done away with for feigned reasons, varying according to circumstances. But the finishing touch of all the tyrant's evil deeds was when he resorted to witchcraft, bent upon magic. At one time he would rip up pregnant women, at another explore the entrails of the newborn babes, slaughter lions, and invent certain abominable actions to invoke demons, and as a sacrifice to avert war. For all his hope lay in these means of securing victory. Indeed, one cannot even mention the kind of things that this tyrant at Rome did to enslave his subjects, so that they were actually reduced to such extreme scarcity and lack of even necessary food as has never been known, according to our contemporaries, either at Rome or elsewhere. But the tyrant in the east, Maximin, secretly forming a friendly alliance with the tyrant at Rome, as with a brother in wickedness, for a very long time thought it was unknown. As a matter of fact, afterward he was detected and paid the just penalty. It was marvelous how he acquired a family likeness and kinship with the villainy of the tyrant at Rome, nay, rather carried off the first prize for wickedness and the reward of victory over him. For it was the principal charlatans and magicians who were deemed worthy by him of the highest honor. He became exceedingly frightened at every noise and superstition, and attached great importance to error with regard to idols and demons. For instance, without divinations and oracles, he could not dare to move even a nail's breadth, if I may say so. Accordingly, he applied himself to the persecution against us with more energy and persistence than those before him, ordering temples to be erected in every city, and the sacred groves that had been destroyed through long lapse of time to be restored with all diligence. And he appointed idol priests in every locality and city, and over them as high priests of each province, one of those engaged in statecraft, who was the most manifestly distinguished in every branch of the public service, with an escort and bodyguard. And he recklessly bestowed governments and the greatest privileges on all charlatans, as if they were pious and dear to the gods. Henceforward he vexed and oppressed not a single city, nor even district, but the provinces under him completely and as a whole, by extractions of gold and silver and unspeakably large amounts of goods, and by the heaviest assessments and varied fines, taking away from the wealthy the possessions they had gotten from their ancestors. He bestowed upon his train of flatterers riches and heaps of goods in a single gift. In truth, he carried his drunken excesses to such a point that he became mad and deranged in his cups, and when drunk would give orders as he would repent the next day when he was sober. In debauchery and riotous living, he suffered none to surpass him, but appointed himself instructor in villainy to those around him, rulers and ruled alike. He induced the army to become enervated as a result of every kind of wanton excess, encouraging governors and commanders to proceed against their subjects with rapacity and extortion, almost as if they were his fellow tyrants. Why need one recall the man's disgraceful deeds of passion or reckon up the multitude of those whom he debauched? In fact, he could not pass by a city without continually ravishing women and abducting virgins. And in this he was successful with all, save only with Christians. Despising death, they set it not, this his fierce tyranny. For the men endured fire and sword and nailings, wild beasts and engulfing in the sea, cutting off and burning of limbs, stabbing and digging out of eyes, and mutilation of the whole body. And in addition to these, hunger and mines and bonds, thus showing on all occasions that they preferred to endure for the sake of piety rather than transfer to idols the honor due to God. And the women, on the other hand, showed themselves no less manly than the men. Inspired by the teaching of the divine word, some, undergoing the same contest as the men, won equal rewards for their valor, and others, when they were being dragged away to dishonor, yielded up their souls to death rather than their bodies to seduction. A certain Christian lady, for example, most famous and distinguished among those at Alexandria, alone of those whom the tyrant ravished, conquered the lustful and licentious soul of Maximin by her brave spirit. Renowned though she was for wealth, birth, and education, she had put everything second to modest behavior. Many a time he importuned her, yet was unable to put her to death, though willing to die, for his lust overmastered his anger. But punishing her with exile, he possessed himself of all her property. A great number of others, unable even to listen to a threat of fornication, underwent every form of torture and racking and mortal punishment at the hands of the provincial governors. These indeed were wonderful, yet most surpassingly wonderful was that woman at Rome, truly the most noble and chaste of all those toward whom the tyrant there, Maxentius, in conduct like Maximin, attempted to act offensively. For when she learnt that at her house were those who ministered to the tyrant in such deeds, and she also was a Christian, and that her husband and he too a prefect of the Romans, through fear had permitted them to take and lead her off, she begged to be excused for a brief space, as if forsooth to adorn her person, entered her chamber, and, when alone, transfixed herself with a sword. And straightway dying, she left her corpse to her procurers. But by deeds that themselves were more eloquent than any present, than any words she made known to all men but those present and those to come hereafter, that a Christian's virtue is the only possession that cannot be conquered or destroyed. To such an extent, in truth, did the two tyrants, who had divided among them east and west, carry the wickedness that they wrought at one and the same time. But who is there, in search of the reason of such evils, who would be at a loss to find it in the persecution against us, especially as there was no cessation of this great state of confusion until Christians recovered their rights of freedom. Chapter 15. In fact, during the whole period of 10 years of persecution, there was no respite in their plotting and warfare against each other. The seas were unnavigable, and none, no matter whence they sailed, could escape being subjected to all kinds of torments, stretched on the rack and having their sides torn and being examined under all sorts of tortures in case they should possibly be coming from the enemy of the contrary part, and in the end subjected to crucifixion or punishment by fire. Moreover, every place was busy with the preparation of shields and armor, the getting ready of darts and spears and other warlike accoutrements, and of triremes and naval gear, and no one expected anything but an enemy attack all day long. and subsequently the famine and pestilence broke out among them, about which we shall recount what is necessary at the proper time. Here ends Book 8 and chapters 14 and 15, and we'll move on to some notes and commentary. These chapters describe the political turmoil that arose during the decade-long Diocletian persecution, which included the rise of two tyrants, Maxentius in the west, that is in Rome, and Maximin in the east. This volatility would lead ultimately to the rise of Constantine as emperor. Chapter 14 describes the rise of Maxentius, the son of the deposed Maximin, who is discussed in the previous chapter, Book 8 and Chapter 13. Maxentius, again his son, emerged as the tyrant of Rome. Not only did he persecute Christians, but he lived a life of gross moral debauchery, which included forced adultery and rape. He put many Romans, including senators, to death. And worst of all, says Eusebius, he engaged in witchcraft and magical practices, including ripping up pregnant women to explore the entrails of their fetuses. He is described by Eusebius as like a Caligula figure. Meanwhile, another tyrant arose in the east named Maximin. He also practiced magic and was filled with superstitions. He energetically persecuted Christianity and attempted to restore paganism, including ordering pagan temples to be built in every city and appointing pagan priests to serve in those temples. He engaged in drunken excesses, riotous living, and the sexual assault of women. The only ones who opposed him were the Christians, who suffered greatly under his persecution. Eusebius notes how a Christian lady, and in the notes, the editor tells us that Rufinus identifies this lady as Dorothea of Alexandria, rebuffed Maximin in defense of her modesty. He then notes how a woman of Rome, again, the editor tells us that Rufinus names this person as Sophronia. She was likewise attacked by Maxentius, but was able to take her own life by the sword rather than to be abused by the emperor. Chapter 15 notes that during the remainder of the 10 years of persecution, there was no respite from the plotting and warring of the two tyrants. Even travelers on the sea were not safe, as they might be accused of siding with the enemy and made subject to torture, including death by crucifixion or fire. In conclusion, these chapters again describe the disorder within the empire and the rivalry among the tyrants Maxentius and Maximin, which would eventually lead to the rise of Constantine as the emperor. And with his rise, there would come an end to the persecution against Christians, and a period of a great peace and prosperity would be brought upon the church. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. Hope that this has been helpful and encouraging to those who are listening, and we will look forward to speaking to you in the next episode in this series. Till then, take care and God bless.